Welcome to Cascade Talks, celebrating 10 years of Cascade research.
Croeso i'r sgyrsiau Cascade, dathlu 10 mlynedd o ymchwil Cascade. Dyma podlediad sy'n trafod yr ymchwil a'r arloesi sy'n digwydd ym maes gofal cymdeithasol I blant.
A podcast that discusses and explores the latest research and innovation in the field of children's social care.
Hello and welcome to another of our podcasts in the Cascade 10-year anniversary podcast series. I'm Sally Holland and I'm a Professor of Social Work here at Cascade, and I'm very happy to be joined by two of my colleagues here in Cascade today for this podcast, which is going to be looking at inequalities in society and how that affects what we research and what we find out. So over here we've got...
I'm Martin Elliott. I'm a senior research fellow here in Cascade. I've worked here for, or been in Cardiff University for 12 years now, I think.
What did you do before you were a researcher?
Prior to that, I'm a qualified social worker. So I qualified in the late 90s. And I worked in various parts of children's services for about 16 years, both in England and in Wales.
Great. And I'm also joined by Nell.
Yes, I'm Nell Warner. I'm a research associate here in Cascade, and I have been in Cascade since 2018. Before that, before doing the PhD, I was worked in the children's sector, so in children in Wales, and previous before that I had some teaching experience.
Great. So as I said in another podcast, I'm a social worker like Martin as well by background. So I think, today we're going to be talking about how we research children's social care, but we've all got a background of practice as well in different ways in the field, trying to support people face to face. So today we're going to be looking at inequalities. And I suppose the inequalities we're really talking about in society are those big structural inequalities. So poverty is a really big one, income inequality, but we're also going to be talking about ethnicity, gender, and touching a bit on sexuality and disability. But the reason I'm saying touching a bit on those two things is, as we will explain during the podcast, is that we know much less about them so far from our research. So I'm going to really start off by asking Martin a bit about his research, because he has done quite a lot of research really ever since he came into Cascade about income inequality in particular, haven't you? So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you've found out about how income inequality affects children's social care.
So I suppose it mainly relates to two pieces of work that I've been involved in. One was part of my own PhD, and the other one was as part of the Child Welfare Inequalities Project, which was a large sort of four-nation study that covered the whole of the UK, which was led by a chap called Professor Paul Bywaters. And Paul has a background in health inequality research, and he wanted to try and apply those sort of ideas to children's social care. And what we looked at was the relationship between poverty and your chances of coming into contact with children's services, either through child protection processes or by becoming a child who's looked after by the state.
Which, for those of us who've worked in children's social care, seems like quite an obvious question. Perhaps there's some obvious answers here as well, because we know that many of the people we work with do face a lot of poverty in their lives.
Yeah, so on one level, I think you're completely right. I think, a lot of people would say, well, we know this, it's obvious. You know, a lot of social work is done in the same streets, in the same neighbourhoods, and they are disproportionately those that are in the poorest places in local authority areas. I think where Paul's research and my own PhD helped with that discussion was, I think although it was a sort of a taken for granted piece of knowledge that that's who social care worked with, I don't think there was anything that actually sort of captured the extent of the inequalities that were there in terms of actually quantifying how much living in one of those places or being in one of those households affected your chance of coming into contact with the state.
Yeah, you produced some really quite dramatic tables, didn't you, and graphs which showed a very steep line.
Yeah, so the main tools that we use was this idea of a social gradient, which comes from health research, which is that idea that for each step increase in poverty and deprivation in how we measure it, there's a corresponding increase in the numbers of children who come into care. So, for example, if you look at Wales, if you look at households that are in the 10% least deprived places in Wales versus the 10% that are the most deprived, your chances of coming into contact with children's social care goes up by 12 times.
Which is huge, isn't
it? It's massive, yes.
Yeah. But I suppose something that really struck me and everyone else who read your research findings was that this wasn't consistent wherever you lived in the UK, was it, or even which local authority you lived in. There were some differences.
Yeah, so however you cut the data, so whether that's by local authority, by country, by the reasons that you came into care, that gradient is always there. But you're right, it changes in sort of steepness. And it varies between countries. So Wales has the steepest gradient of the four UK nations.
So wait a minute, that means we take even more children from, or we intervene more with more children from poorer households?
From the poorest places, yes. Yeah. And then counterintuitively, the shallowest gradient is actually in Northern Ireland, which has higher levels of deprivation, but actually intervene less. So whilst we've identified this idea of a social gradient and the inequalities of your likelihood of coming into contact, there's a lot more work that needs to be done to unpick that, to understand what is it about different countries or different local authorities that mean that gradient changes. Because the idea is that obviously, as it is with health inequalities research and practice, is the idea of reducing the gradient, of making it more equitable.
Yeah, we want things to be fairer in society, of course, but we also want things to be fairer in how we work in children's social care. And I suppose that's where really I turn to Nell, because, you know, Martin and his colleagues' findings were quite stark, weren't they? But I think using some new techniques, you've been able to sort of find out some interesting patterns behind all of that, haven't you?
Yeah, so based on some of the work that Martin and the others all did, looking at this social care gradient, I've just recently been doing a piece of work where I have been, again, using this children's social care data, but I've been able to look at the different problems that parents have and what's been happening in households before children have gone into care. So using the data that I've been able to get from health, I've been able to find out whether parents have certain things that are quite common, for example, things like substance misuse and mental health problems and other issues, and whether those issues are more common in the households where children go into care or not, but also how they're related to these other issues like poverty. And what I found was that when you take into account these issues that parents have, although there is still this social care gradient, it's not as strong as it was. So the findings of that study have shown that this social gradient is less steep in when you take into account the levels of problems that the parents have. And so that part gives some bit of an explanation of why it might be occurring. That's because these things like substance misuse and parental mental health problems, which are all associated with the likelihood of children going into care, are also more common in areas of deprivation.
So, and that's important, isn't it, Martin? Because your study showed that some local authorities were taking in far more children than might be expected by the levels of poverty in their area. But do Nell's findings sort of complicate that a bit?
There are statistical ways of looking at what you might expect the rate of children coming into care to be based on the deprivation of each local authority. And there are exceptions to that. There are some that fit nicely into what you would expect and the actual rates at which they bring. But then there are some where it's a lot lower than you would think it should be if it was purely based on deprivation. And there are some where it's much higher. So yeah, so that I guess the argument is that what Nell's done is more nuanced, I guess, and pulls out some of the other factors. Although, you know, arguably, you know, we know that there's relationships between, as Nell's already said, between things like substance misuse and certain types of mental health and problems and deprivation.
Definitely, yeah. And Nell, you haven't just looked at poverty levels, have you? And the issues that parents had. You've actually found some really interesting other patterns. You know, for me, one of your real standout findings is that related to the gender of the parent.
Yeah, that's right. So I had a look at the households that children were living in before they went into care, and I looked at these problems like substance misuse and parental mental health issues in any adult in the household and how much impact that had. But then I also looked at how much difference it made according to who that adult was. And when I looked at all the households together, it seemed to have a much bigger impact if it was the child's biological mother who had these risk factors, the substance misuse or mental health or any of these issues. And so we did some additional analysis just looking at the single parent households, just because when you're looking at a household with multiple adults, it can confuse matters if, you know, there might be some interaction in the household. But just the single parent households, I had single parent households headed by a woman and single parent households headed by a man. And again, most of the risk factors had a bigger impact. So drug misuse and alcohol misuse and most of the mental health problems had a bigger impact on the odds of care if it was in a single household headed by a woman. So if a woman had those problems, whereas if a single man or a single father household had those problems, they didn't have such of an impact.
So it looks like, you know, forgive me if this is a slightly crude analysis of it, it looks like social workers or social care services are intervening more or paying or more likely to intervene at a higher level, in other words, taking children into care, if a household is headed by a single parent that has the same kinds of problems as a household headed by a single man. So we've really got a bit of a gender effect there.
Yeah, yeah, it does appear. It's almost all the problems. There was one exception was anxiety that had a bigger impact if that was in a single father than if it was in a single mother. But for all the other health problems that I looked at, and mental health problems rather, and substance misuse
yeah,
and alcohol misuse, the impact was bigger in the single mothers. So,
which actually really reinforces some things that have been found by much earlier studies, but doing more different kinds of methods. So if you think of our Cascade colleague, Jonathan Schofield's very early study, it was his PhD study at the end of the 90s, into the kind of gendered aspects of child protection, we saw that there appeared to be patterns of women having more of a spotlight on their parenting than men, which, you know, is something that our parents group has said to us they think has been an issue as well, that as women they're perhaps blamed more, or they feel like they're blamed more for problems in society. And of course, we also see another effect sometimes in everyday practice, which is that where there's been problems and a child can't stay at home with a mother, perhaps, and a stepfather, that the birth father actually hasn't been engaged with and hasn't had a chance to get involved. So sometimes this attention and focus on mothers has meant that men have been not able to parent. So it can work in a number of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. It was a really stark finding. And you know, that would be a very, you know, clear explanation that there is a difference in attitudes. We also don't know where that attitude starts. So we don't know. I was discussed the findings with some social workers, and one of their suggestions was it could also be in referrals to social services. So we don't know that it's actually in the social worker's perception, or if it's in the public's perception of who is being referred. You know, they might be more likely to refer a single mother than a single father.
So a bit like poverty, you know, we're not blaming social work for all the inequalities in society and saying that they have to fix them all. But social work sometimes work within that context that reflects those wider inequalities in society, doesn't it? And I suppose the big question is whether social work can help to reduce inequalities rather than just reflect them. But and before we go on to really what can be done about some of these things, it'd be good to hear about a couple more of your findings, perhaps particularly around ethnicity. I know you found some quite interesting patterns there.
Yeah, a couple of things to do with ethnicity that I've looked at in the data. So one was whether the risk factors have the same impact for different ethnicities. And then the other was if how much difference there was between different ethnicities in the likelihood of children going into care when we took into account these risk factors. So you probably may know that quite commonly within the statistics for looked after children in Wales, we find that certain ethnicities are overrepresented. So children who are of mixed heritage or from Black, Afro-Caribbean or Black British backgrounds tend to be overrepresented, whereas children who are from Asian backgrounds tend to be underrepresented compared to the white majority population. But I did a piece of analysis where we looked at how much difference there was once we took into account these parental problems, again, because there's different levels of these parental problems in different households. And once we did that, we found that all the ethnic minority households were more likely to have children entering care than the white majority population. So where Asian children had been underrepresented, it seems that the reason that they might be underrepresented is because their parents are less likely to have issues like substance misuse, alcohol problems, some of the mental health issues. And when that's taken into account, that there doesn't seem to be that, the sort of differences.
So that's another really stark finding from your research, isn't it, that we really need to know more about. So we've always, as you say, understood that some ethnic minority children are more likely to come into care than others, but you've actually rather confounded that by saying, yes, they are, but in fact, they all are when you take into account the parents' problems. So again, that's really important. And so going back to Martin, and I've got some views on this I'd like to share too, but, what does all this mean between your and Nell's research? What can we do about this in terms of policy or practice? Are there some things we could do to sort this, or do we just need to find out more first?
I think there's things that we can do now. I think there are things that we don't completely understand yet that require research. There's always a need for more research.
That's what academics always say.
Exactly, yes. So, but I think, on the back of things like the Child Welfare and Equalities Project, work was done about what practically can social workers in their day-to-day practice do. So we've done pieces of work where we've observed social work practice to look at how they represent things like people's socioeconomic circumstances in their assessments, in the types of services that they offer people. And there is, there's two camps, I guess, within social work practice. There are those that feel like poverty is too big a thing to address, that it's something that they've got no control over because they don't control things like the benefit system. There are also some who don't think that it's a role for social work at all, that it's, that's not part of what being a social worker is about.
And I think both those things have got some truths in them, haven't they? Yeah. But I think, I know that there's been some studies of what some people call anti-poverty social work. Israel's led the way on this, haven't they? And shown that when social workers are given the space and resources to really work on poverty issues with families, then actually families all around outcomes, including the well-being of their children and their ability to care for their children, really improve. And you might say, well, that's really obvious, but that's actually not just about giving people more money. It's about maximising their income in other ways.
Exactly. So on the back of the Child Welfare and Equalities Project, there was some work done by BASWA, the British Association for Social Workers, and they developed an anti-poverty a poverty aware practice guide, and a similar document was developed in Northern Ireland, which is about, that what practically in your day-to-day practice can you do? And some of that is about things like income maximisation. It's, you can't change the benefit system, but you can make sure that people are accessing all of the things that they're actually entitled to under the current system.
And you can recognise, can't you, that sometimes we put barriers in people's ways, not just in social work, but in all sorts of other services, like asking people to turn up for appointments at certain times or for contact with their children, when actually they may face lots of barriers to getting there on time. But we, you know, I think as a society, we can be quite judgmental about people who don't seem to be putting their all in.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess that goes back to sort of, you know, the old ideas of deserving and undeserving poor, which have their roots right back in social work's history. But yeah, I mean, the ATD Fourth World, who are a poverty charity, did a really interesting piece of work, which was around the sort of domains of what it's like to live with poverty, which I really like and I reflect on all the time, which is that thing about, you know, one, it isn't just about the absence or presence of money. It's about the experience of living in poverty, which is things like systems that don't take account of the struggles that you have, the stigma and the shame associated with not being able to, you know, earn a living or clothe your children or whatever it happens to be, about, you know, that your contribution quite often isn't recognised. The positive things that about your life are sometimes ignored. So in terms of day-to-day practice with people, there are ways in which social workers can work alongside people in ways that acknowledge those things, even if they can't do anything about them, which I think is, you know, in terms of the Krumenevo type work that was done in Israel, that's what they were getting at, was doing things in ways that acknowledge those things, even if you can't do anything about them.
But there's much more, I think, that governments could do too. And that's where policy comes in, isn't it? So we are quite excited here in Cascade to be evaluating the basic income pilot for care leavers, where the pilot is just about giving young people leaving care a decent income, a minimum wage, but a living wage income, but actually seeing whether that makes a difference to their ability to live their everyday lives. And that is really breaking down this sense of deserving and undeserving, because it's unconditional money, which people find quite difficult to get their heads around. But it's interesting, and we're finding it very interesting. We'll watch this space, but really, we have too much poverty in society, don't we? And both of your findings show, because as you said, Nell, you know, that interaction between poverty and things like mental health is and disability, we know, is so strong that poverty is clearly having a big impact on the need for social work in the first place. We're coming towards the end of this podcast now, and, you know, we're not going to be able to solve all the issues of society yet, even with the important findings you've come up with so far in both of your research studies. But, you know, so what else do we need to find out? What else would you like to research to know a bit more about how we can best tackle some of these inequalities, or what roles children's social work has got in that? Nell, do you have your next sort of key project you'd like to do?
Well, I'm currently looking at issues to do with children returning home from care. So that will may possibly also, I will look at some of these equality issues in that, and we may see that there's some differences there. But I also think that there's some areas of inequalities that we haven't really explored properly yet. So particularly some of the issues to do with disability, parental disability, and how they impact, and child disability, how that impacts on equalities in social care, and things to do with sexual orientation and, you know, having an impact as well.
So you've still got a lot to do, yes, haven't you? And how about you, Martin? Have you got, around inequalities, have you got some ideas about how you'd like to move forward?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, we're currently in a period of time where predominantly social work practice is very individualized. It's about risks at an individual level and doesn't take enough account of the wider factors that impact on people's lives. You know, in doing things like the Child Welfare and Equalities Project, we drew on theories and methods that are quite common within the field of public health. And I'd really like to explore what a more public health focused approach to child welfare and reducing harms to children would look like. So those ideas of the social determinants within health, they're used to the idea of social determinants of health, which is some of those things are biological factors to do with you as an individual, but it's also then thinking about where you live, where you were educated, what sort of things you can do for work, right out to national policies and the decisions that are made by governments and how all of those things impact on your health. And I'd really like to look at a way that we could apply those sorts of frameworks to child welfare, to think about how we develop a whole system idea of how we can intervene.
I think that's so important, isn't it? Because not only are some of these sort of barriers we've been talking about today tremendously frustrating and exhausting for the families experiencing them, they also are for the people working in the system as well, who can see all this going on and, you know, would really like to be working within a much more, you know, whole system environment, so they don't feel it's just them plugging away to support families. So I think watch this space in terms of Cascade. We're really excited about some of the new methods and techniques we've got to find out more about these inequalities, but also and most importantly, how we can improve things for those who receive services and those who work so hard to deliver them as well. So thanks very much for listening to this podcast and our series, and that's enough from us for now. Thank you. Diolch.
Diolch am wrando ar y benod hon yn ein cyfres o bodlediadau Sgyrsiau Cascade 2024 sy'n dathlu 10 mlynedd ers sefydlu Cascade.
Thank you for listening to this episode in our 2024 Cascade Talks podcast series celebrating 10 years of Cascade.
Mae'r gynofan ymchwil a datblygu gofal cymdeithasol i blant yn ymdrechu i wella llesiant, diogelwch a hawliau plant a'u teuluoedd.
The Children's Social Care Research and Development Centre strives to improve the well-being, safety and rights of children and their families.
Diolch i ymchwil Iechyd a Gofal Cymru am eu cefnogaeth ariannol.
We'd like to thank Health and Care Research Wales for their funding support.
Ac i gael rhagor o wybodaeth ynghylch a'n dathliad, 10 mlynedd a gwaith Cascade, ewch i cascadewales.org.
To find out more about our 10-year celebration and the work of Cascade, visit cascadewales.org.